Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So the American people have to really understand what's at stake here. It's two trains heading for a collision course. One of them is called Endless War, now moving war into space, versus human needs, human progress, dealing with our real problem, climate change. Which are we going to do?
That's the voice of Bruce Gagnon from Space for Peace. On this week's show, we speak to Bruce about the proposed new Space Force, the lunacy and cost of that idea, and a better way forward. So stay tuned. Online, I have Bruce Gagnon. He's the coordinator of the Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. He was co-founder of the Global Network when it was created in 1992. He's been a longtime activist, author of Come Together Right Now, and a television program called The Issue, and many, many accolades. Very happy to have you back on the show, Bruce. How are you doing?
Good to be with you. Thank you.
And the media is kind of a worst nightmare come true. Trump has announced that he wants to create a new branch of the military called Space Force. The mainstream media seems to be kind of taking this lightly or even making jokes about it, but this is no joke. What does this mean for global security, Bruce, if this thing were to move forward?
Well, I think it would be one of the worst things that ever happened, because we're talking about moving the arms race into space. And when you do that, first of all, it's a massive expenditure that money would have to come from human needs programs like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid in order to pay for it. But more importantly, it would force China and Russia and other countries to respond by matching what the United States is doing. The U.S. is way, way ahead of anybody else on space weapons technology, use of space for fighting warfare, and it would be a really horrible thing. It would make the world less secure. So we've got to do everything we can to try to stop this.
Now, what about the argument that the U.S. Needs to be dominant in this area because Russia and China are naturally going to want to move towards weaponizing space? What about that argument that isn't it good to be ahead of that curve?
Well, it doesn't really hold water, that argument, because for the last more than 25 years, every year, China and Russia and Canada have gone to the United Nations initiating a treaty called PAROS, P-A-R-O-S, Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space, saying, let's close the door to the barn before the horse gets out. Let's create a new treaty, because the 1967 Outer Space Treaty at the UN didn't go far enough. It didn't anticipate new technologies that are being developed today. And so it's really out of date and not useful. And so the United States, though, and Israel have been blocking that treaty for the last 25 years at the UN. The reason why the United States is doing it is because the aerospace industry, the weapons corporations, view space as a new market. They can make massive amounts of money if they can get away with moving the arms race into space. And so this is why the United States has refused to negotiate seriously a treaty. This forces then Russia and China to begin to respond. They see the writing on the wall. And as they do that, then the bully comes running back home, cries out, look, look, they're picking on me. They're picking on me. But the truth of the matter is, Russia spends 4.8% of the world total in military spending. The United States is well over 30%. You add NATO members to the U.S. total, it's more than 50%. So the truth is that China and Russia are a real challenge to the U.S. today.
Now, let's touch on something you've mentioned, and that is the cost. The U.S. is spending tremendous amounts on military. Can we put it into perspective what's being spent now and what this new program would entail? Because we know going into space is not cheap if we look at any of the NASA launches, etc. What are we spending now, and what are we, what would be the projected spending of this were to move forward?
Well, you know, the United States today has more than 1,700 operational satellites in space. Just imagine that for a moment. It costs hundreds of millions of dollars to build and launch each of them. And so it's just a mind-boggling amount of money. And then all over the planet, the United States has established ground stations. So there's so many different pots of gold that are being appropriated to pay for current U.S. military space activities. Some of it is in NASA, some of it is in Department of Energy budget, some of it is in the Pentagon, some of it is in many other pots too. But when you add it all up, it's several hundred billion dollars a year is spent on that whole infrastructure and bureaucracy of space warfare planning, NSA spying. It's all done with satellites. So that whole process, that's a huge amount of money. You add to that the idea of creating a separate force, a separate service, knowing how wasteful the Pentagon is. Even the Air Force, frankly, is opposed to this idea because they're saying that it would be massive duplication of bureaucracy and everything else. And I'm sure that's going to be the case. So it's a really bad idea. So they would be, I'm sure, spending another $100 billion or more in addition to what they're already spending. But then once it has a mission, well, then, oh, my God, we've got to have more technology. And so then you add a whole lot more money at that point as well. So this whole thing just becomes shattering. We're already in massive debt in America. You know, we're basically playing with Confederate money in America. So the idea that we're going to go and spend all these tax dollars on creating a space force is just utterly ridiculous. You know, for some years, the Pentagon has been saying that this idea of Star Wars would be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth. And I read an editorial in one of the industry publications called Space News a few years ago, where they said, we have to be responsible corporate citizens and come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for this. And we have. And we're now sending our lobbyists to Washington to secure that dedicated funding source. And they went on to describe what it was, the entitlement programs that officially in America are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and what is left, what little is left of the welfare program. So these are the programs that the weapons industry, the aerospace industry, have identified for destruction, for defunding, in order to pay for the ideas like this Space Force. So the American people have to really understand what's at stake here. It's two trains heading for a collision course. One of them is called Endless War, now moving war into space, versus human needs, human progress, dealing with our real problem, climate change. Which are we going to do? And we've got to take control, otherwise we're in big trouble.
Absolutely. It just makes me sick when I think of them raiding the social services and social spending that's just critical to so many millions of Americans. And it also seems so counterintuitive to, on one hand, go to North Korea and, you know, preach about disarmament, and then on the other hand, start talking about weaponizing space. It just seems so counterintuitive. You believe it's the aerospace industries behind this? What else could be behind this? Just pure ideology? Or is there any other forces pushing this?
Well, I think there is another thing, and it is about Russia and China. Not that they're a threat, but that, you know, the United States right now is the global power. But Russia and China and other countries are growing and building new institutions that are saying, we're tired of seeing the United States running around the world, trying to control everything, being the singular power of the world, thinking that it's going to run the show. It can attack anybody whenever it wants. It can violate international law anytime it wants. It is hypocrisy. You know, the United States lectures Iran or lectures North Korea about nuclear weapons, but under Obama, they announced that U.S. was going to spend $1 trillion to build a whole new generation of United States nuclear weapons. So Russia and China have said, look, let's move to a multipolar world, a world that is really run by larger groups of organizations at the United Nations. Let's truly make this a world where we make decisions collectively and not just the United States dictating terms. And so as a result of that, Russia and China and other countries have created a new economic forum called BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. And it stands for Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. And it's an alternative to the IMF and the World Bank. And they're saying that when we make loans, when BRICS makes loans to underdeveloped countries, we're not going to demand that they privatize. We're not going to demand that they sell off all of their national assets in order to pay back the loans. We're not going to turn them into client states, into puppets, into appendages. And this is a real threat to the Western corporate model of capitalism. And this is, I think, one thing driving this idea that the U.S. must achieve dominance now in space, because whoever controls space will literally control the planet below on behalf of corporate interests. So this is really what is at stake right now. And it's, I think, one of the most frightening moments in human history.
Absolutely. And, you know, it seems that there's no good news coming out of America these days. They're isolating themselves. They're in fights with Canada and Mexico, the European Union. All their traditional allies are turning their back, and now they're picking trade wars with China, and it goes on and on. Out here where I live, we had terrible flooding in the spring, and now we have tremendous forest fires, as California has the largest fire in history. As I sit here doing this interview, it's pushing almost 40 degrees where I'm sitting. So we have the human capacity to kind of get together and use that money for such, you know, human progress and fight global warming. So let's talk about the alternatives to this. Like, what could we do as human beings, as citizens, to turn this around, and where do we start?
Well, we have to start in our own communities. Where I live in Bath, Maine, the Navy builds destroyers that are being outfitted with so-called missile defense systems that are key elements in U.S. first strike attack planning. They're being used today to encircle Russia and China as the United States militarily surrounds both of those countries and puts a loaded gun to Moscow and Beijing's head, saying, you either do what we tell you, or we have the ability now to strike first and to take you out. And so what I've come to learn about our country here in the United States is that we are addicted to military production. It's the only thing we really do anymore. Our number one industrial export product of America is weapons. And when weapons are your number one industrial export product, what is your global marketing strategy for that product line? Well, of course, the answer is more war, you know, more instability, more chaos. And so we literally have become a killer society, where we have to have endless war in order for people to have jobs. And this is not acceptable. So in our community, we've been running a multi-year campaign here calling for the conversion of Bath Iron Works to build rail systems, commuter rail systems, to get us out of our polluting cars, to build offshore wind turbines to help us deal with climate change, and to build tidal power systems so that we don't continue to use fossil fuels, which are exacerbating and accelerating the whole climate change process. If we don't make this kind of transition, then we're finished as a species. Our children and grandchildren have no future. And so this is the kind of political agenda that we must be projecting, political demand that we must be projecting now. And it's a win-win-win. It helps end the need to go to endless war, because you're making something else besides weapons in your community. It's, in fact, creates more jobs. Studies show repeatedly that military spending is the worst way to create jobs, that if you do all these other things I was referring to, building rail, building solar, building wind, building tidal power systems, you create more jobs. So it benefits the environment, it benefits unions, and it benefits the peace movement. It's a win-win-win for the people.
Absolutely. And what a global rally to get all nations to work together to this noble cause. I was just reading an article that they have a solar farm in Mexico, whereby this solar farm can provide electricity for 1.2 million homes. It's this immense farm. So there's so many opportunities. We know where the good wind sites are. We know where the good sites are for solar. It's just a matter of political will and moving the conversation away from militarism into much more human progress agendas. So you have an event coming up called Space for Peace Week. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for many years, every October, we hold a week of international protests called Keep Space for Peace Week. It's October 6th through the 13th. And local protests are held all over the world at military bases, at military production sites. People have educational seminars in their community, show films. So if you go to our website, spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org, you'll see the poster for this year's Keep Space for Peace Week. Our theme this year is No Space Force, and we urge people to organize some kind of an event in their local community. In the menu of our website, you'll see a item called Space Videos, and if you click on that, you'll see a lot of different documentary films and educational videos that could be used at a local community event during Keep Space for Peace Week to educate people. We've got to really educate more people about what's going on, what the plans are for space, but also begin to talk about these alternatives that we were just talking about a minute ago. And so our work has to become more multifaceted. We can't just talk about the bad things and just say, you know, protest against this. We also have to be for something. So let's be for the conversion of the military-industrial complex. That's where the money is. If we really want to have a sustainable economy globally, if we want to have a sustainable future, we have to take the money out of the Pentagon. This year, Russia cut their military budget. The second year in a row they did, because they said we have too much poverty in Russia, and we've got to deal with that. China is putting huge amount of money into planting trees all over their country to get rid of their pollution problem. And so they're already making a move. The United States is the only country that is really pushing this idea of continued warfare and now moving it into space. And we, especially those of us that live in the United States, have a special responsibility to offer an alternative vision.
Absolutely, and I agree. We have an anti-war festival, a film festival here in the fall too, so perhaps they could borrow a few of the films and education tools that you have on your website. And absolutely, we need a grand vision. And what beautiful things are happening already around the world with just such meager resources. Imagine if you could tap into the kind of military and wasteful, absolutely putting weapons in the ground for, you know, millions of dollars that will never be used, and sitting on the edge of catastrophe. So absolutely, thanks again, Bruce, for doing this. And if you could let us know what your website is and contact information, and any final thoughts.
Yeah, again, our website is spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org. I hope that people will go there, check it out, find out what we're doing to try to stop this idea of the Space Force, and give us a hand. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Bruce. Thanks for tuning in. We'll take the show out with a song by Dana Lyons called My Tiny Room. Talk to you soon.
There are flowers on my windowsill, and everyone looks like the sun. The sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are bees in the flowers, rolling in pollen and fun. The sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are children out my window. They laugh and they squeal as they run. The sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are soldiers out my window, all of them daughters and sons. A sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room. There are planes out my window with weapons that shine like the sun. Where all life is fragile and one, I can see the whole world from my tiny room. I see God out my window, and I see that God shines like the sun. Another spring day has begun. I can see the whole world from my tiny. There are flowers on my windowsill, and everyone looks like the sun. The sun is within everyone. I can see the whole world from my tiny room.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.